I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. On this archive edition of Midday, my guest is John Urschel. In 2014, he signed a $2.3 million contract to play for the Baltimore Ravens. 3 years later, he retired from the NFL to pursue a career in mathematics. His new memoir chronicles his parallel journeys as an elite athlete and a rising star in the world of advanced math. It's called Mind and Matter. Plus, investigator James Cabezas helped prosecute some of Maryland's most prominent public officials while battling a debilitating eye disease. His memoir, written with Joan Jacobson, is called Eyes of Justice: A Career Crime Fighter Battles Corruption and Blindness. Our conversations were pre-recorded, so we can't take your calls and emails. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. My guest today is John Urschel, whose resume includes great skill and high achievement in two areas that are not often, in fact, hardly ever, associated: football and mathematics. He's a former offensive lineman for the Baltimore Ravens who retired from the NFL at the age of 26 to pursue a career in math. African Americans are grossly underrepresented in the field of mathematics. Over the last 10 years, they've been awarded a mere 1% of doctoral degrees in the field. And soon, John Urschel will have one of those doctorates. He's pursuing his PhD in math at MIT. Mr. Urschel received his bachelor's and master's degrees in mathematics at Penn State, where he also played on their Division I football team. He's written a memoir about these two pillars in his life, a passionate love of math and the myriad intellectual challenges it presents, as well as his unwavering commitment to a game he succeeded in at the highest level. The book is called Mind and Matter: A Life in Math and Football. He co-wrote it with his wife, Louisa Thomas. They'll be speaking about the book tonight at the Ivy Bookshop in Baltimore, and John Urschel joins me now here in Studio A. It's really great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here, I must say.
And it was a huge pleasure to read this fascinating, beautifully crafted book, to get an insight into your intellectual rigor, your imagination, your creativity, and the fact that there are these two seemingly disparate passions in your life. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this, and I recommend it highly to everybody.
I have to say that, first of all, that's just amazing to hear because, I mean, not just me, but when anyone sort of writes a book, you put so much of yourself into it, especially when it's a memoir. You spend so much time trying to imagine sort of your intended audience and try to make sure they get the most out of it. And I have to say, I'm very, very pleased to hear your comments about it, not just your comments now, but your comments off air as well.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really something. And of course, I always feel a little strange when I interview folks about their memoirs because you know nothing about me and I know an awful lot about you because
yes.
I've read your book. But one of the things that struck me just so profoundly, you mm-hmm. quote a mathematician named G.H. Hardy, who back in 1940, which by my calculations is about 1,000 years ago, you know, beauty is the first test, he writes. He says, there is no permanent place in the world for ugly mathematics.
Yes.
I was so taken with this notion that math is beautiful.
Yes.
How is it beautiful?
Well, first of all, math is rigorous. There's something very nice about a statement being right or wrong. There's something very simple about the concept of the two of us discussing something. And if we're saying contradictory things, at least one of us has to be wrong. And there's something very elegant in the simplicity in mathematics, in the sense that mathematics is this language that describes the world we live in. It is sort of the universal quantitative language. And it's so fascinating that math has all of these beautiful, elegant connections and has certain sort of levels of simplicity, given that it's really representative of the world we live in. It's really saying something. Yeah, about
and
that.
Those are the things that strike you. It's the elegance and simplicity. The basics of this. Even though these formulas that you're working with, these theorems that you're defining, you even have a theorem named after you. You and a co-author of this, you know, incredibly esoteric and difficult for most lay people to understand. For virtually all lay people to understand, but it seems incredibly complicated to us, to those of us looking at mathematics from the outside. But to you, there's a simplicity to it. That's amazing.
There is a simplicity. And one of the most sort of rewarding things about mathematics is that often you don't realize the simplicity until you go further and further in mathematics. The idea that sort of the more you know, the simpler some things become. And it's a really rewarding feeling to sort of learn more about mathematics, to even sort of discover more about mathematics, and to really see that there is a simple underlying structure.
It's midday here on WYPR in Baltimore. My guest is John Urschel. The book is called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. We are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page, by the way, if you'd like to catch us there. And we have some friends from the Big Ten Network who are filming this interview as part of a special they're doing about you, John. So we look forward to that. Yes. So the appeal of mathematics, its elegance, its simplicity, its beauty.
Actually, if you would allow me to stop you mid-question, I would like to say that, so you gave us a quote by Hardy, and I can't help but refer our listeners to a beautiful, beautiful essay about the importance of mathematics, not just to serve the world, but for its own sake as an art form, a essay called A Mathematician's Apology, which I highly...
And by apology, it's not a...
Yes,
I'm
it's
sorry.
Not, it's not
an
the
argument.
Modern,
yeah.
Yes, not,
yeah.
The, not the modern yeah. term of apology.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend that you read this if this concept of mathematics as an art interests you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's next on my list because it does interest me a lot. So if that's the appeal of math, what's the appeal of football? And by the way, I'm sure you've been asked a million times, you know, what's the connection between math and football? I couldn't care less about that. I don't think there has to be a connection. So I bring that personal bias to the table here. But there's obviously an appeal of football because you've worked really hard at football.
Yes.
You're really good at football, and you've been good at football since high school.
Mm-hmm. Initially, the appeal of football, as strange as it sounds, was I really enjoyed the physical contact. As a young person, as a high schooler, I really enjoyed hitting people. And there was something so fundamental about it, something so raw about it that I truly enjoyed.
So again, it's sort of back to simplicity in a way.
Yes,
it's simple.
Yes.
I just feel like banging into stuff.
Yes, I mean it is
in a sanctioned,
in
okay
a sanctioned,
way.
Okay way that I would never sort of do such a thing with someone who's not a willing participant. But in this environment, with a willing participant, there's something very simplistic about it.
You write about when you were drafted by the Ravens. You were drafted in the fifth round of the 2014 draft, and Ozzie Newsome, our great and revered general manager, now former general manager of the Ravens.
I was not aware of this.
Oh, yeah, he's retired or he's stepped back, and there's now a new general manager, and his name is escaping me now.
Ah, when did this occur?
This season. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So
gotcha.
It's been happening for a while. But he said to you, why do you want to play football? Mm-hmm. And you observed that that question probably was not asked of any other person in the draft, but he asked it of you. Mm-hmm. So what do you think he meant? And then how did you answer that question?
First of all, that's a fantastic question. So what he meant by this was, well, the elephant in the room. I'm very good at mathematics. I have a very viable and a quite good alternative to playing football. Why should they spend a draft pick on me when I have an alternative? And this is a very reasonable question. And I told him, you know, I love playing football. I need to play football. And I really want to play football at the highest level. And I don't want to stop my answer to this question there because I have to say, I go back and I think about this in hindsight. At the time when I was entering the draft, so many people were asking me these questions about sort of, does he need football? I remember my...
They were worried about the fire in the belly.
Yes. I recall that in my in one of my sort of draft reports or my scouting reports, it said, "We'll be fine with or without football." And at the time, I took it as a slight. I took it as a slight, and I thought, these people don't know me. These people don't know what football means to me. And in hindsight, I have to say, it was probably warranted.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely warranted. Sort of myself back then, I thought it was absolutely ridiculous, but I have to admit, I am sort of introspective person. I'm a retrospective person. And in hindsight, given that I eventually did choose mathematics over football, I think it was quite warranted.
By the way, Eric DaCosta is the name of the new GM of the Baltimore.
Yes. Eric was with us when I was there. I believe Eric was sort
of he was the assistant. Yeah. Yes. So he's now risen to the top.
I see.
I think one of our producers called her Uncle Google and found that out.
I see.
But at the time that you were drafted, you knew that at some point you were going to want to pursue a career in math. And
yes.
You were making a calculation. Okay, do I do that now or can I wait a little while and then pursue a career in math? And you said something that was interesting to me. You said football is a young man's game, but so is math.
Yes.
Why is math a young man's game?
Well, in the same way in that football is a young person's game, because you're physically the strongest and the most resilient and the sharpest when you're young, the same can be said for a person mentally. And this is somewhat sort of shown by the fact that the greatest prize in mathematics, or at least in sort of more pure areas of mathematics, the Fields Medal, is awarded to a mathematician under 40.
Under 40.
So,
and the motivation for that is to encourage young people, or they just don't think people over 40 are really going to come up with anything worth worrying about?
Well, people over the age of 40 do come up with great contributions. It is the case, I believe, that the majority of very high-level results do sort of usually occur before 40. And so it seems like a reasonable age cutoff, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although some mathematicians have sort of pushed back against this, and there are other prizes that are awarded at any age.
When you decided to retire,
yes,
in 2017, in 2015, you're in practice. You take a hit from Terrell Suggs, another
yes.
revered Raven here in Baltimore.
Yes, who's now in
has moved on.
Yes,
to
yes
other
I heard
things.
About this.
So, obviously, a lot of people attributed your leaving football to a fear, somewhat quite well warranted,
yes.
about a brain injury, because
yes.
there's been so many studies that we've now heard about for a long time mm-hmm. about brain injuries to NFL players,
yes.
particularly linemen. You
yes.
were a lineman. You guys hit your heads even more so than certain people in other positions.
Yes, the so-called subconcussive hits.
Subconcussive
yes.
hits, yeah. So, how did that concern about possible, what they call CTE, brain mm-hmm. injury, factor into your decision to stop making a whole bunch of money
yes.
and go to graduate school at MIT?
Yes. So I need to touch on a number of things there. First of all, I was actually in the PhD program at MIT already.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of, I was well into it. I was already in my my second year at that point. And it certainly did sort of contribute to my decision. This was sort of a decision I had been thinking about for quite some time. It contributed in the sense that I think it would be absolutely ridiculous for me to think about retiring and deciding whether or not I want to play another year or not. And not think about this. I think it would be just a very, very poor decision making if I didn't think about it. It was certainly something I considered. I also considered sort of more time for mathematics, and I also considered sort of the prospect of becoming a father. And
we should say that when you took that hit in practice,
yes.
you lost the ability to do high-level math for a little while. I mean, it jangled things in your brain.
Yes, although
that had to have scared you like crazy.
I have to say, as strange as this sounds, and you know how it goes when you have a book that comes out, you go on the circuit, and so I'm sort of near the end of my tour, And so I've had many of these sit-down interviews. And one of the most interesting things that I've come to realize is that this the second concussion I had, which was this concussion in 2015, when I was deciding whether or not I wanted to play another season, I didn't even think about this concussion. And in hindsight, it's completely crazy that this did not even contribute to my decision, in the sense that after I had that concussion, okay, you ask me, how many concussions have I had? I'll list my concussions and I'll list that one. But from a sort of thinking about my health point of view, I completely forgot about that concussion. I completely forgot about it to the extent that when I was thinking, do I want to play another season or not? Yes, of course, I'm thinking about sort of my body health. I'm thinking, you know, about, you know, the health of my knees, my back, my hips, my shoulders. And, you know, of course, you know, that I'm sharp mentally. But the fact that I had that concussion was not something that even contributed to my decision. And it's something I should have certainly thought about, because as someone who sort of prides himself on making well thought out and reasoned decisions.
Yeah, I mean,
it's absolutely
being analytical is yes, not foreign to you.
Yes, yeah. It's absolutely That's crazy wild. To me when I look back and yeah. I realize I completely forgot about that concussion. And I don't know what that says about what I'm not sure what it says about me or about sort of, you know, human nature in general. But after I had that concussion and I got better, I forgot about it.
That's either an incredibly simple and beautiful conclusion or incredibly complex and
yes.
frustrating. And I'm one
not,
of those two.
And I'm not sure which. And I'm not saying yeah. that I didn't think about my health when I retired, because of course I did.
Right.
I mean, I was sort of
and
looking.
And you mentioned you're married.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to doing math for a long time and sort of raising my daughter and doing these things, you know, when I'm 60 and 70 and being able to walk and being able to lift her up and being sharp. And so, of course, you know, not just my sort of brain health, but my entire sort of holistic body health is something that definitely is a contributing factor. But for some reason, I completely forgot about that concussion, which is just strange to me.
That is. John Urschel, the book is called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. It is a gem. We will have more with John Urschel after a quick break. We'll try to take some calls and comments if you got them. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. You can catch us on the John Urschel Facebook page, on the WIPR Facebook page, where we are streaming live. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, Baltimore City Solicitor Andre Davis will be my guest for the hour. In 2017, after serving 30 years as a judge on local, state, and federal courts, Davis retired from the bench to accept an appointment by former Mayor Catherine Pugh as Baltimore's top lawyer. We'll discuss some of the challenges he's faced since then, including the resignation of Mayor Pugh and the ransomware attack that has hobbled city government for the past 2 weeks. So Andre Davis joining me here tomorrow on Midday. Hope you can join us as well. And coming up later today, a conversation with James Cabasis and Joan Jacobson about their new book that chronicles Cabasis' career as a beat cop and investigator in the state prosecutor's office. It's called Eyes of Justice, A Career Crime Fighter Battles Corruption and Blindness. If you're just joining us, my guest is former Baltimore Raven John Urschel. He's currently a PhD candidate in math at MIT. We're talking about his new memoir, Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. Our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. We're streaming on the WIPR Facebook page, and you can drop us a tweet if you'd like to as well. John Urschel, what does a mathematician do? I mean, I have a notion of like what a physicist does and what a, you know, people in an economist or something. Mm-hmm. But what does a mathematician actually do?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm going to use that question to tell a story, which as I've been doing. So I didn't know what a mathematician was until I got to university. And I have to say that I think, I mean, okay, I could be wrong. I think the majority of young people in math class all across the country have no clue what a mathematician is. They might not even know the word. And I think that's...
They might not even think it's a thing. They might just think, well, you got to know math to, you know, be able to get through the world. And, you know, and kids from time eternal have been complaining, why do we need to know algebra? Yes. Why do we need to know calculus? Yeah.
I certainly didn't even know the word mathematician when I was in middle school and high school. And I'll say that for young people who are talented in mathematics, it's very, very hard to aspire to be something or do something when you don't even know what that something is, and you can't even think, you can't even imagine what a person who does that looks like or what they do. So what is a mathematician? A mathematician is someone who uses the tools and language of mathematics to solve problems. A mathematician can be a professor at university doing research on open problems in sort of the theory of mathematics as well as teaching. A mathematician can work for Google or Amazon to come up with algorithms that power our phones, that solve complex problems. They can...
And you think of algorithms as being in the purview of computer scientists.
Yes. So this is a good question. And the gray area between computer scientist and mathematician is quite gray, I would say. I mean, I wouldn't say mathematicians are out, let's say, being programmers, but mathematicians are certainly dealing with algorithms. And there's a great sort of overlap between the two. In the same way that math and physics has a great overlap, you have many mathematical physicists, you have many great mathematicians who have made discoveries in physics, and many great physicists who have made sort of discoveries in mathematics. The area of theoretical computer science, which contains algorithms, is very much shared between the two. And I put sort of theoretical computer science and I put mathematical physics under the umbrella of mathematics. But I would put both under the umbrella of computer science and physics as well.
And as you say, as a young kid, mm-hmm. you not only didn't know what a mathematician was, you didn't know anybody who was a mathematician.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And as you encountered mathematicians in your study of this, because you were fascinated by them from a young age, you, of course, encountered that very few of them, almost none of them, are African American.
Yes.
And so how does that inform how you have pursued your career and how you have, modeled what you're doing for other people?
It's I don't have a simple answer for you. First of all, I should say that my experience with mathematics was a very personal one. And you saw this in the book, and listeners will see this in the book, in that I learned math at home. I learned math with a book. So all of my experiences learning mathematics as a young person were extremely personal. It's me in a room, just me and mathematics.
So it's not like you're in grade school and some wonderful teacher inspires you. You decided you were interested in it. You knew in your heart that you wanted to pursue this.
Yes, it's me and mathematics. And I should say that because of that, the fact that I was African American really had nothing to do with my math career. Completely independent. It has had no influence on my math career. But I should say, I believe I am somewhat of an exception. Since I've been at MIT, I've had the sort of pleasure of interacting with African American mathematicians. At Penn State, I don't think I'm not sure I even met a single African American mathematician or a math major. But at MIT,
or even a math major,
I don't think so. At MIT, MIT is of course a hub for sort of knowledge. And so you have many mathematicians visiting and coming in and out. And so I've met many African-American mathematicians. I've met many African-American sort of would-be mathematicians, you know, young people. And when I talk to a lot of them, especially the undergrads, I often hear sort of a similar story over and over again. And the story is they love math, but they're in their math classes and they're with all these other kids, and they feel like all the other kids know more than them. And they do. And they feel like all these other kids learned all of this stuff in high school. And they feel like all of these other kids were much better prepared than they were from, you know, where they grew up. And they feel like they're the worst student in the class. And then they pair that with being the only African American in the class. And now all of a sudden, this is a very lonely and isolating feeling.
Yeah, that's a seriously stressful situation.
Yes, this is an issue. And how to remedy this issue? I mean, this is tough. And I have to say, I have never experienced this. This was not my sort of interaction with math, but I do want to give sort of both sides, because although that wasn't my experience, I want to stress that I've met many African American mathematicians where that is their experience. And it's tough.
And it's your parents are professionals. I mean, your mom's an attorney. Your dad's a thoracic surgeon.
Yes.
They divorced when you were a little kid. But yes. You remain, you know, in touch with both. And
yes.
But they're not mathematicians.
Yes.
You know, but they just allowed you. They encouraged you. I mean, your mom in particular encouraged mm-hmm. you to explore these things on your own.
Yes. I definitely sort of... my early mathematics education I owe to my mother, sort of fostering a love and curiosity about mathematics when I was young, largely through puzzles and board games, in fact. But my higher level math education I owe almost exclusively to my father, who sort of saw I was quite good at math and encouraged me to learn about things.
He was also a football player, too.
Yes, he was also
a football player. He played football in
college. Yeah, he played football at the University of Alberta, he was someone who really valued education. So he retired from being a thoracic surgeon. He was the chief of surgery at Beth Israel Deaconess in Harvard's hospital in Boston. And he retired at the age of like 45, and he simply went back to school. And he got degrees. He got a master's degree in economics, in industrial engineering, in mathematics, and right now he's pursuing a degree in computer science. And he does these things because he loves learning. And he sort of taught me the beauty of just learning, and he's the one who really guided my sort of journey through higher level math. Let's say guided my journey from calculus onwards.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have a phone call from Barry in Baltimore. Barry, welcome to Midday with John Urschel.
Hi. I faced a similar situation in which when I got to college, I realized that my background in math was nowhere close to some of the students that I was in class with. But I also found almost as a filtering at that point, because once you don't take those classes, they don't even give you access to some of the higher level and theoretical stuff. So a lot of those things I had to learn on my own. So I wanted to ask the guest, what's the easiest pathway for folks that are out of school, that just love math? We want to learn about some of the new things that are out there. We wanted to have discussions or even try to figure out some things, but we don't have the formal education to even approach some of the folks that are actually teaching the class.
Yeah, that's a great question, Barry. Thank you.
Yes. So, first of all, I want to make sure I understand the question correctly, and I believe the way I'll interpret the question is someone who does not have a very strong background in mathematics has some aspirations of sort of getting up to speed in math and being able to understand some of the great breakthroughs that are occurring in math. And the best recommendation I can give for anyone is a not-so-little book by the name of Princeton's Companion to Mathematics. It is a very thick and big book. It covers many areas of mathematics in a very simple and elegant way. And I would just highly recommend that you read it cover to cover. It's a big book. One thing that you know, you can do is, just put it on your kitchen table read, you know, they're very digestible little, like, one or two page little snippets. Read a page every day, and you'll find that your knowledge, and more importantly, your appreciation of mathematics will increase greatly because of it.
And that's how you did it. You talk about in the book, Mind and Matter, mm-hmm. you got these books, you were fascinated by the people who were doing mathematics, you were fascinated by the theorems that they were coming up with and the breakthroughs that they were coming up with. And you, I mean, other, you know, you're playing at Penn State, you're on the team bus coming back to the hotel after a game, and you've got your face in a math book where everybody else is, you know, sleeping or doing something else. I mean, this was something that you just could not live without. This was a drive for you.
Yes. And the book that I mentioned and recommended, sadly, I was not aware of this book. I'm not sure this book even existed when I was younger. But, you know, if you know a young person who maybe is, let's say, high school aged and knows, like, maybe basic high school math and is interested in knowing more about math, I think this is a fantastic book to give them, just for them to sort of, like, peruse and sort of some light reading before they go to bed, because it is very much light reading as far as sort of mathematics learning goes. And I would highly
recommend it. But it's going to take a little fire in the belly for the kid to want to read it.
Bit of fire in the belly. Yeah. But I have to say, I believe it's written by a guy by the name of Gowers, and it is beautifully written.
Right, The Princeton
Companion to Mathematics.
All right, there you go.
There's also a Princeton Companion to Applied Mathematics. But I would recommend just the simple mathematics one. And then, you know, if you find yourself more of an engineering type person, then perhaps you would want to look at the applied math one as well.
We have an email from Stephanie who says, I had a thought about maybe John Urschel could use his math chops to develop a formula to make to come up with how to pay college athletes. A former college athlete.
Yes.
Do you think college athletes should be paid?
Yes, absolutely.
And, do you have a formula to figure out how to do it?
Yes. My formula is pay college athletes more money. And I have to say that...
Pay them any money at this point.
Yes, yes. So some people may agree with me. Some people may disagree with me. I want both sides to be aware of the sort of the deep thought that has gone into that opinion of mine, which is... I am a former college athlete, and if you ask me, you know, as someone in a profession, if that profession should be paid more, I think I'm always going to say yes. Who is going to say no to more money? So I am very biased in my answer, and but I am going to say yes, college athletes should be paid more as a former college athlete, but how to do this? It is actually a very complicated question. I think one of the, talking more seriously now, I think one of the easiest ways to sort of move towards that is to start working towards some sort of pension for select players in certain teams and certain conferences, 401k contributions. Perhaps you can increase healthcare sort of given a year or two out of college for sort of lingering things.
Yeah. Well, there's a formula. There's the beginnings of a formula.
Yes.
Yes. The Urschel theorem of paying college athletes. That's good. This has been a real pleasure. I have really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much, and good luck with the book, and have a good time at the Ivy Bookshop tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
John Urschel, he's a former offensive lineman for the Baltimore Ravens, a PhD candidate at MIT, and a rising star in the field of advanced mathematics. His memoir is called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. He co-wrote it with his wife, the journalist and author Louisa Thomas. John Urschel and Louisa Thomas will be discussing their book tonight at 7 o'clock at the Ivy Bookshop in North Baltimore. We've got more information on our website, wipr.org/midday. Coming up after a quick break, James Cabezas. He's a former chief investigator for the Office of the State Prosecutor, along with local journalist Joan Jacobson. They're going to discuss their new memoir, Eyes of Justice. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.